content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Maureen McDonald for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from the July 2025 Walter Magazine. We begin with the cover article, Soak Up the Fun. You don't have to head to the beach to enjoy the water this summer, by Addie Ladner. Summertime brings wind in your hair, sun on your skin, toes in the sand, and hopefully some dips in the water. Lucky for us, the Raleigh area has some lovely lakes that offer a range of recreational water activities. One of the largest is Falls Lake State Recreation Area in northwest Wake County. It was formed in 1981 by the Army Corps of Engineers as a flood control and freshwater source and offers over 12,000 acres of water and 175 miles of mostly undeveloped shoreline, which makes it popular for both recreation and nature gazing. Visitors can access the lake by walking the trails or through one of its 7 boat launches, from which they can take in the diversity of wildlife that lives along its banks, including turtles, bald eagles, herons, and osprey. Falls Lake might be one of the most underutilized lakes in North Carolina, says Randy Geist, a captain for Motorboatin' Recreation Rental Company, noting that even on peak days, there's ample space to zip around the water, set up anchor by a shore, or canoe through its bays. Geist says their pontoons are particularly popular for friends or families in July. Groups come over with packed coolers, we have music on the stereo, and we just get on out there. Everyone returns to the dock happy. By contrast, the smaller Lake Crabtree County Park, which doesn't allow motor vehicles, tends to attract visitors looking for quieter, more solitary water activities. This 520-acre reservoir near Raleigh-Durham International Airport can be accessed easily from hiking paths or one of its boat access points near the pavilion at the boathouse. One popular way to enjoy it is by kayak or canoe, which folks can rent for free. It's very family-friendly and appealing for folks not as comfortable on the water, says park manager Drew Cade. The lake also attracts sailing groups, including high school and college teams, looking for calm, accessible waters with just enough wind. Even though we have an airport and I-40 nearby, this feels like a fun respite from the rest of the world, Cade says. From stand-up paddleboarding, to tubing, to sailing, to chartering a ski boat, enjoy great recreational options on lakes in the Raleigh area. Two other spots to consider. Bond Lake, about 30 minutes from downtown Raleigh in the Fred G. Bond Metro Park. This lake is run by the town of Cary. Here you can rent kayaks, pedal boats, paddle boards, and sailboats, or bring your own to the public boat launch. But note, no gas-powered vessels are allowed. Visit carync.gov for more information. Or Jordan Lake, the anchor of the Jordan Lake State Recreation Area. Jordan Lake offers more than 13,000 acres of water, about 30 miles west of downtown. 9 access points offer spots to swim, put in a boat, or hike or camp near the water. It's especially popular for fishing and spotting bald eagles. Visitors can rent kayaks and paddle boards through Wake Rack. Visit wakerack.com. This article was edited for Time. Next, through canvas and camera, Painter Robert Dance and his photographer son Stuart share a love and talent for creation by Colony Little. In the 2024 Raleigh Fine Arts Society North Carolina Artists Exhibition at CAM Raleigh, a pair of artworks shared a special bond. One was a painting, a captivating seascape by Robert Dance, that invited the eye to wander within layers of deep blue sky, foamy waves, and fine sand. Across the gallery, a framed photograph by Stuart Dance featured the legendary Burger Stand char grill, evoking the quietude found in the dead of night on Hillsborough Street. The image's dark, moody tones conjure an opening scene from a 1960s film noir. In the parking lot, a lone truck's headlights illuminate two customers placing their late-night order. The works were literally night and day, but they each expertly rendered the relationship between light and dark, the luminosity of the sun reflecting on waves, the fluorescent light glowing in the wet pavement. And it's no coincidence that the artists share a last name. Robert, who turned 91 in May, is Stuart's father. Raleigh resident Stuart is the youngest of Robert's three sons. The oldest, Scott, secretly colluded with Stuart to submit their dad's work into the juried show. "Yeah, they surprised their father," Robert says with a warm chuckle. "I didn't realize Stuart had the painting. Scott snuck it to him." Robert, who lives in Kinston, is a realist painter with an abstract sensibility that he weaves into work focused on the mesmerizing, dynamic characteristics of nature. He began painting when he was 6 years old. He recalls that his first painting was a watercolor of an iris flower. He was born in Tokyo, Japan. His father worked as a tobacconist, which sent him all over the world to buy and sell tobacco products. Robert's family left Japan in 1941 in advance of World War II, then lived all over the United States. Robert matriculated at the Philadelphia Museum College of Art, where he majored in illustration. He eventually settled in Winston-Salem to raise a family with his wife, Carolyn. The two had three sons, and Robert worked as a commercial artist for book publishers, magazines, and advertising agencies, developing the art for marketing campaigns for clients like General Electric, Haynes Corporation, and R.J. Reynolds. He slowly pivoted to fine art in his late 30s. In the decades since, he's earned numerous awards and recognition, including from the Smithsonian and the North Carolina Watercolor Society. In 1991, Carolyn passed away from an aggressive form of multiple sclerosis. In the years prior, Robert had cared for his wife, finding solace in nature, gardening, and model airplanes, all motifs that found their way into his work. "I often paint the flowers and birds from my garden," Robert says. But he might be best known for his nautical works, which express his love for boats and the ocean, an affinity he cultivated during his early years. Coastal Bands of Color, the painting shown in that 1924 exhibition at CAM, is a classic example. The piece harmonizes the sky, sea, and sand through shading of cerulean blue, seafoam green, and pale neutrals. Its location is Atlantic Beach, where Robert's second wife, Coleman, an artist and jewelry designer, has a home. On the seashore, a lone fisherman casts a line over the rolling waves as gulls fly in the distance. For Robert, painting requires discipline and an affinity for problem solving. His photographer son, Stuart, really recalls being drawn to cameras from an early age, surrounded by creatives in the dance household. The middle brother, Mark, is also an accomplished artist. I grew up with a dark room in the house because my dad would photograph studies for paintings when we'd go on trips, he says. He would come back and develop his own film. That made an early impression on me. From his love for photography, Stuart began collecting rare cameras. He now owns over 350 of them, with the oldest dating back to 1897. This eye for experimentation and collecting also extends to an interest in music and working as a sound engineer. Stuart studied design and production at the North Carolina School of the Arts in Winston-Salem, culminating his interests into sound design. After graduating, he began touring with dance companies and moved to New York City, working for on- and off-Broadway productions, including Rent in the early 2000s. During his years living in New York, Stuart struggled with mental health, addiction, and self-harm, which ultimately necessitated his return to North Carolina. I crash-landed in Raleigh after a long period of self-destruction, he says. I had been drinking too much and burned out. I literally drank everything away. Stuart lapsed into homelessness between rehabilitation treatments and periods in crisis, but during this time, returned to photography as a source of healing. Throughout his recovery, Stuart returned to sound engineering for select projects and is now focusing on developing his photography portfolio. He recently started a project with his partner, Autumn Harrison, who's also a photographer, called Aperture and Atlas. And over the past year, they've traveled the East Coast photographing various points of interest, sharing the images and the lessons he's learned through his travel with his father. My father is somebody who's like-minded, says Stuart. He grew up traveling all over a different world. So talking with him about art and photography has given me a lot of direction. While Stuart is on the front end of a career as a photographer, Robert does not consider himself ready to wind down. He's fastidiously working on his submission for consideration in the next Raleigh Fine Arts Society North Carolina Artists Exhibition, and he believes that his best work is still in front of him. This article was edited for Time. Next, Guardian of Stories. C.J. Roberts takes the reins of 8 North Carolina History Museums by Hampton Williams Hoffer. In April, C.J. Roberts began his new role as Executive Director of the North Carolina Division of State History Museums, which includes the flagship Raleigh Museum and 7 regional history museums around the state. The North Carolina Museum of History downtown is undergoing substantial renovations to be unveiled in the fall of 2028, which will include both essential updates like HVAC, accessibility, and leak repairs, as well as expanding the physical space with exciting reimagined exhibits. It's a new era for the iconic museum, a pillar of our state's cultural heritage that boasts some 150,000 artifacts, paying homage to 14,000 years of North Carolinians. Roberts will also oversee the extensive repairs from Hurricane Helene's damage to the Mountain Gateway Museum and Heritage Center in Old Fort, a tribute to the rich history of music, art, food, and the natural world at the gateway to the Blue Ridge Mountains. Other regional museums under his directorship include the Graveyard of the Atlantic Museum in Hatteras, the Museum of the Albemarle in Elizabeth City, the Museum of the Cape Fear in Fayetteville, the North Carolina Maritime Museums in Beaufort and Southport, and the Tobacco Farm Life Museum in Kenley. Certainly, North Carolina's history is dense and dynamic, sweeping from the mountains to the sea, from pirates and plains to Revolutionary War frontiers. Protecting the keepers of these stories is no small feat, but Robert knows what he's doing. As president and CEO of the Tampa Bay History Center for the past 20 years, he took the museum from concept to completion, earning it accreditation from the American Alliance of Museums and expanding it across numerous sites. Prior to that, he served as president and CEO of the Mighty Eighth Air Force Museum in Savannah, Georgia, and director of the George C. Marshall Museum at the Virginia Military Institute in Lexington. Not to mention, Roberts led the team that established the National World War II Museum in New Orleans, a six-acre campus of state-of-the-art historical exhibits and pavilions that was designated by Congress as the official World War II Museum of the United States. We caught up with Roberts to learn more about his enthusiasm for a new adventure in North Carolina. What is it about North Carolina that made you want to take this job? I'd been in my current role in Tampa for 20 years, and when thinking about the next chapter, this opportunity checked a lot of boxes. My wife and I love the location and are excited to immerse ourselves in the community and all the state of North Carolina has to offer on both the recreational side and the cultural side. This will be my third museum building project, and as I look back on my career, what I've enjoyed the most is when I've had the chance to build new physical spaces, like what's happening in Raleigh, in addition to new programs and exhibits. In your opinion, what is the value of history museums in our communities? We often say, study the past to make decisions for the future, and I truly believe that the more we understand our history, the more we understand each other. In some ways, the donated artifacts have the most value. These pieces have stories behind them because we know where they came from. When a family donates a great-great-grandfather's Civil War uniform, for example, we have a name and an artifact that can really be brought to life. As the artifacts from the North Carolina Museum of History are carefully packed and stored nearby, it's a reminder that preserving these things is important, as is making them accessible to people. It joins communities. Ultimately, diverse experiences and cultures make for better places to live. What can visitors expect from the new space? In a few years, the museum will look completely different, with a new entrance atrium, new plaza, new restaurant, and overall just a complete renovation of the building, with expanded space and new systems throughout. We're redoing the museum's signature exhibit, The Story of North Carolina, which covers some 14,000 years of history from the state's earliest inhabitants, think the signature wigwam and canoe, to the 20th century. That exhibit will now incorporate newer technologies to tell broader and deeper stories. It will be at the front end of design. I think this is going to be an exciting transformation, and our visitors will be very happy to see more stories, more artifacts, and broader interpretation. Is there a particular period in history that draws you, or an exhibit you've never forgotten? I would have to say 19th century American history, though I'm no historian. Having spent so many years working for military-themed museums, I'm drawn specifically to the pre-Civil War and Civil War era. That said, an exhibit that has made a lasting impact on me was the Blitz exhibit at the Imperial War Museum in London. You could actually go into a simulation of the German air raids on Britain and understand how it felt to be there, the sounds, everything. It was just really well done, immersive and powerful. What excites you most about your new role? When I left New Orleans, having led the team that built and opened the National World War II Museum, there was a going away party where a donor came up to me and asked how it felt to come into a new community and leave it a better place. That question really made an impression on me. I had never thought about my work in those terms, but in a way, this idea defines my job now. I can come to North Carolina, and as a steward of these important historical institutions, I can make it a better place. From the Explorer section, Zipping to Zebulon, For the Love of Peonies, But Finding So Much More, by C.C. Parker. Steve Taras, the beloved local floral designer and owner of the Watered Garden, waved a bouquet of eye-popping peonies at the audience of his sold-out Art in Bloom demonstration at the North Carolina Museum of Art. As the crowd gave a collective, ah, Taras pointed to a person in the crowd. "That's David," he said, "of Oak Ridge Farms in Zebulon. He supplies me with most of my peonies." Sitting with my friend Molly in the audience, we hatched a plan to visit Oak Ridge. We did a little online research. Turns out they raise cows, pigs, and chickens for meat and grow seasonal flowers, quote, to feed the soul, end quote. They also host a weekly farmers market with other vendors that's open to guests. It was definitely time for a field trip. Just a few weeks later, Molly and I set out to Oak Ridge from our homes in Five Points. We headed east on Highway 64, and I'd barely finished my coffee when we pulled into the Oak Ridge Farm about 20 miles later. Being early in the day, there was a smallish crowd, and we pulled our car right up front. Molly and I both consider ourselves black belt shoppers, so in short order, we were both fully loaded with a variety of David's organic meats, fresh asparagus, and of course, bunches of his white peonies. After loading the car, we took a walk across the charming farmyard to take in a little more. We saw turkeys and pigs in the field nearby, a hoop house for ducks and chickens, and what looked like an emu in the distance. We were so charmed by David's market that we decided to drive into town. What a lovely discovery. Zebulon's downtown is a real-life Mayberry. North Arundel Street serves as its main drag, lined with cute restaurants, shops, and breweries. Lots of people were out and about, and miracle of miracles, we easily found a parking spot. First order of business, a caffeine stop at the Creative Cup, where a whole latte fun is promised on the front door. The shop was bustling, with folks circulating through for their morning coffee. Molly noticed a flyer on the community bulletin board for a garden club plant sale that very day, only two blocks away. The Steel Magnolias Garden Club sale was being held at the Zebulon Community Center. We were latecomers. The sale was ending shortly, But the Magnolias told us to grab a red wagon to haul our plunder. It didn't take long to fill the radio flyer with hollyhock, hostas, ginger lily, curly willow plants, and various shades of foxgloves. But what really caught my eye were the various basket gardens planted in all manner of containers, each filled with lovely mixtures of blooming flowers and greenery, and carefully labeled with care instructions. I threw two of those in, too. At checkout, Molly bought a raffle ticket for good measure. Mona Pants Mintage Funky Finds and Gifts was our next stop, filled with a cool assortment of vintage this and that. Debbie, the store's owner, is passionate about raising money for animal rescue and also funds canine bulletproof vests and pet oxygen kits for first responders. All the shop's proceeds go toward the cause. She suggested our next stop, Chocolates by Whitney, just 4 miles down the road in Wendell. Located in a tiny old brick building, the shop has glass display cabinets filled with silver trays brimming with gorgeous confections. Selections made and wrapped, we noticed that a long line of regulars trailed out the door, all waiting patiently for their turn. Steering our car toward home on Pool Road, we happened upon Grasshopper Farm in Knightdale, a charming farm stand style venue with a tiny general store, food trucks, a plant area, outdoor dining area, and even an old-fashioned outhouse. The store serves ice cream, freshly popped popcorn, and freshly picked strawberries. Ice cream in hand, we made our way through the property, enjoying the festive air and happy families. Then it was time to head home. We'd only been gone 4 hours, but it felt like we'd taken an overnight trip. We'd visited new shops, talked to friendly strangers, and taken in the fresh air and farm views that are hard to come by in our increasingly urban city. Lucky for me, I ended up with the ultimate souvenir. Molly's raffle ticket won, and she passed along her prize to me. Now I've got a wooden chair with its seat planted with summer flowers by my front door, a little piece of Zebulon to enjoy at home. This article was edited for Time. We've run out of time for today's episode of Walter Magazine. Be sure to tune in next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Maureen McDonald for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Walter Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.